I know. Once you turn people loose like that, it's almost impossible to get them back. So, all right. So, Ryan shared with us a little broader vision of home and talked about what God's purpose for the home is. I want to step one step deeper into that and specifically talk about this thing called marriage. And so hopefully for many of you who are here in the, well, hopefully for all of you who are married in the room, but for many of you, this will be of great encouragement. It'll also probably be a good reminder of what this thing called marriage really is and what it's designed to look like. And then for those that aren't married who would like to get married, hopefully this is just a great reminder of what it is you're getting into when you get to that point. And if you are here single and have no plans to get married, don't ever forget the impact that you can have on those around you. Just because you're single does not mean you don't have a good working understanding of what marriage actually is, the way that God designed it. So before we get started, I don't know if you saw this in the news recently. Really amazing story when I read it. It's titled Elephants Never Forget. Really crazy story. Let me just read this to you as we get started. It says this, in 1993, Peter Davies was on holiday in Kenya after graduating from Northwestern University. On a hike through the bush, he came across a young bull elephant standing with one leg raised in the air. The elephant seemed distressed, so Peter approached it very carefully. He got down on one knee, inspected the elephant's foot, and found a large piece of wood deeply embedded in it. As carefully and as gently as he could, Peter worked the wood out with his knife, after which the elephant gingerly put down its foot. The elephant turned to face the man, and with a rather curious look on its face, stared at him for several tense moments. Peter stood frozen, thinking of nothing else but being trampled. Eventually, the elephant trumpeted loudly, turned, and walked away. Peter never forgot that elephant or the events of that day. Over 20 years later, Peter was walking through the Chicago Zoo with his teenage son. As they approached the elephant enclosure, one of the creatures turned and walked over to near where Peter and his son Cameron were standing. The large bull elephant stared at Peter, lifted its front foot off the ground, then put it down. The elephant did that several times, then trumpeted loudly, all the while staring at the man. Remembering the encounter in 1993, Peter could not help wondering if this was in fact the same elephant. Peter summoned up his courage, climbed over the railing, and made his way into the enclosure. He walked right up to the elephant and stared back in wonder. The elephant trumpeted again, wrapped its trunk around one of Peter's legs, and slammed him against the railing, killing him instantly. Probably wasn't the same elephant. All right, that has absolutely nothing to do with what we're going to talk about. All right? I'm sorry, I just can't help myself sometimes. That could have been such a cool story, right? Some of you tonight, you'll be eating supper, okay? And you'll be like, I can't stop thinking about that elephant story. Oh my goodness. All right, I don't even know how to transition now. There is none. Okay, so we won't really, it won't be a smooth transition. Okay. Sorry, folks. I just, you know, sometimes you just can't help it. I want to spend a little time this morning talking about this thing called marriage, specifically what we would call the covenant of marriage. Okay, this thing called married, many of us in here today are married. Okay, I see many of you sitting with your spouse this morning. So glad to have you here this morning. So glad to have all of you here this morning. One of the things that we need to understand when it comes to this thing called marriage is it starts with this thing called love, right? Well, hopefully it starts with this thing called love. It helps. All right? The greatest commandment ever given, the most important thing in life, is to love God and to love others. In Matthew 22, starting in verse 36, it says this, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself." When I think about love in the context of marriage, I would put another word on that, and I would say, let's call it true love, right? It's a little bit more than just loving my neighbor, this person who I'm married to. I have the opportunity to actually love them more and a little differently than I would just my neighbor, and I would call that true love. Let's take a look at a few characteristics of true love when we think about this in the context of our marriages. True love stays in love. Remember we talked about that last week, Sunday night? Boy, it seems like a long time ago already, but we talked about what it looks like to stay in love. We use the passage in Philippians chapter 2 kind of as the model for that, or the example that Jesus gave us on that. But true love, one characteristic is that it stays in love. True love also shows a daily commitment to each other's happiness. What that means is that I have my spouse's best interest in mind. It shows a daily commitment to the other's happiness. True love wants to do what the other enjoys, right? Being interested in that which interests my spouse. True love also does this. It grants space when needed. Okay, Jennifer and I are very different processors. We process differently. My wife loves to process externally with me, okay? Me, on the other hand, does not like to process externally with her. Actually, I don't really like to process externally with anyone right away, okay? So sometimes I just need to take a step back, and I need a little bit of quiet. I need a little bit of space just to process whatever it is we're trying to come to a decision on, whether it's something exciting, whether it's something that we're struggling with. And Jennifer knows not to jump right into this thing and start trying to, like, let's talk this out, let's work through this. Because sometimes I just need a little space, because if I get rushed, oftentimes what happens is I say things that I shouldn't say, or my nonverbal communication is very loud sometimes. And so I sometimes need to take a little bit of a step back, and my wife knows that, for me to just do a little business internally, let the Spirit have a conversation with me before I step back into a conversation with her. So true love grants space when needed, and you start to understand this about your spouse. True love knows the other's weaknesses and does not disadvantage them. Okay? It does not exploit those or use them to our own disadvantage, to their disadvantage. When Jennifer and I were in premarital counseling, there were two phrases that were used on several occasions while we were walking through premarital counseling. This would have been, 24 years ago. And one of the phrases that we heard during those sessions on several occasions was, the person is more important than the issue. It's one of the things that they were teaching us, like, in this relationship, you're going to have some struggles, you're going to have disagreements, you're going to have arguments. What you need to make sure that you always do is make sure that the person is more important than the issue. And that's something that we've always just kind of kept on the forefront in our relationship. So it knows the other's weaknesses and does not disadvantage them, or the person is more important than the issue. True love celebrates the other's strengths. Okay? It doesn't disadvantage the other person because of a weakness. It actually celebrates the other's strengths, encouraging her or him to do things that they're good at. Okay? Just another characteristic of true love. True love shares feelings with honesty and sensitivity. So the first phrase that just stuck with us was, the person is more important than the issue in our premarital counseling. The other phrase that stuck with us was this one: it's more important to be reconciled than it is to be right. Okay, we can always go back and process some more, but it's more important for us to maintain a posture of reconciliation, especially in the context of our marriage relationship, than it is for me to work really hard at just making sure that I'm right or that Jennifer is right. True love demonstrates trustworthiness, okay? When you can trust the other person, when they've demonstrated this, it just makes a lot of things a lot more comfortable, and you can be a lot more transparent when the person that you're doing this life with, called marriage, is trustworthy. And true love believes the best of each other, okay? We have two options when it comes to people. We can either assume the best, or we can assume the worst. And oftentimes our flesh likes to assume the worst in a lot of situations when it comes to people. But we have a decision to make in all of that where we can actually assume the best in that other person. And I would say that is a characteristic of true love, especially in light of our marriage relationship. Okay, so just some characteristics about true love as we talk about this thing called marriage. When we talk about marriage, oftentimes we talk about the covenant, this thing called this covenant of marriage. I don't know if you've ever thought about what that actually means, like what's a covenant? The reality is when you got married, you made a vow, and you entered into a covenant with God and with your spouse. So what is a covenant? For some of us, we may have gotten married and never really even given that much of a thought. Like, I'm just getting married. I'm not really giving this whole covenant thing much thought. A covenant means to cut. Okay, it comes from the word to cut. It implies the intermingling of blood so that it can never be separated again. In Genesis chapter 15, God makes this covenant with Abraham. And if you are familiar with that story, there was a sacrifice that was made. And the sacrifices, the different animals were cut in half, put on either side, and the blood from those animals ran down and intermingled together so that that blood was never going to be able to separate it into its individual animals again. And that's where this word covenant comes from. Okay? The word covenant, simply, a simple definition would be something like this: an unconditional agreement. It's an agreement without conditions. We talked about what unconditional love looks like. This is sort of like that in that it's an agreement that does not have conditions, this unconditional agreement. I've looked a little bit, tried to come up with a good definition of marriage. I'm a guy that likes to try to keep things as short as possible because the shorter they are, the easier they are to remember sometimes. I want to share with you a definition of marriage, and I don't have a shorter one than this that I think really explains what marriage actually is. If you have one, I'm all ears. Come see me afterwards today, okay? Because I'm all about, down and dirty, simple and quick. Well, not really in all of life, but just when it comes to remembering things, okay? don't hear me say something I'm not, all right? That didn't sound very good. Anyway, I still can't believe you read that story about the elephant man. I still can't get over that. All right. Definition of marriage. Okay, a little bullet point. First, it's a holy covenant, right? This unconditional agreement, this holy covenant initiated by God. Okay, God designed marriage. He performed the first wedding ceremony. Like, this was his idea. A holy covenant initiated by God, conditioned on an irrevocable promise. Okay, the details of this unconditional agreement. These are what we would call your vows. Those are the details of this unconditional agreement that you entered into. To pursue oneness with an imperfect person, okay? You married an imperfect person. Some of you ladies are like, you are absolutely right, Ben. I married an imperfect person. So, a holy covenant initiated by God, conditioned on an irrevocable promise to pursue oneness with an imperfect person of the opposite sex for a lifetime for the glory of God. Oh, that's a little bit of a mouthful yet, okay? If somebody knows how to shorten that up, please come see me. Because everybody in here is like writing furiously right now to try to get that down, okay? A great definition, I think, of marriage. And what I want to key in on this morning a little bit is this irrevocable promise, or what would be known as our vows. Okay, so what I want to do is I want to dig into this thing called vow this morning and put some handles on what is a vow, what is it that I said, or something similar to what I said on my wedding day, and do I really think much about what it is that I said on my wedding day, okay? What is a vow, okay? So I would say it's something like this: an irrevocable promise, pledge, or personal commitment. It's the details of this unconditional agreement, okay? It's this, interestingly enough, it's this promised devotion. It's the binding of oneself to a promise, okay? Now, here's what I'm saying. It's the binding of oneself to a promise. It's not the binding of oneself to another person, okay? That person is imperfect. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to hurt you. We've talked about that this week. It's the binding of oneself to this promise that I'm making, this irrevocable promise, pledge, or personal commitment. It's basically saying this: I'm going to do this no matter what. Okay, if those of us that are, I'm really big into spreadsheets, there's no if-then statement, okay? No if or then statement when it comes to this. I'm binding myself to this promise, and I'm entering into this covenant with this other individual. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 says this, when you make a vow to God, do not delay in fulfilling it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to vow than to make a vow and not fulfill it. Okay, God is serious about vows. So, let's take a look at this a minute. Okay, something similar probably to this, right? To have and to hold from this day forward, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish till death do us part. Okay, just over 22 years ago, on a Friday night in September, I made these vows to my wife, and maybe you made the same or something very similar to your spouse. In the months or the years since that day, have you thought back on the vows that you made to your spouse? When was the last time you thought about the vows and commitments you made? You know, I find it interesting that we have a tendency to forget or maybe just not to think much about our wedding vows, even though our wedding day is one of the most important and significant days of our lives. And have you ever counted how many ifs there are in traditional wedding vows? There are no ifs in those wedding vows. Okay, it doesn't say, I promise today to love you if you treat me in such a way that makes me feel good about myself. It doesn't say, I promise to love you today if you keep your attractive figure after bearing three children. Okay, it doesn't say that. Okay, there are no ifs in those wedding vows. On our wedding day, each of us made a vow to our spouse in the presence of God and likely several friends and family that we were going to love this person no matter what. We told our spouse that we had decided ahead of time. Basically, that's what we're doing on our wedding day, right? We're deciding ahead of time that we're going to love them no matter what would happen in the future. Okay, have you ever thought about that? Okay, I was not thinking about that on my wedding day. Okay, I wasn't thinking about the weightiness of that or the, you know, there were other things I was thinking about on my wedding day. Okay, anyway. And on your wedding day, some of you are like, what? No, come on. On your wedding day, there was no way of knowing what the future would hold, right? I mean, really, there's no way for you to know what the future was going to hold, what changes or challenges or hardships that were ahead. Regardless, we pledged this decided ahead of time love that would not quit when those changes and challenges would come. Okay, and then I found something in God's Word that gives us a little picture of what to expect, right? It does tell us a little bit about the future if we decide to get married. Okay, here's what it says, 1 Corinthians 7. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life. Okay, I didn't get that in my premarital counseling. Okay, I wasn't thinking about that on my wedding day, or I wasn't thinking about that when I got engaged. Interesting, we can learn a lot about the state of many marriages today from this thing called the internet, okay? And it must all be true, right? Because it's on the internet. No. However, it's very interesting, we can find out a lot about our culture and the type of information people are looking for, especially on Google. Most places have it now. You've experienced this if you've been on the web. You start typing in something on a search engine, and what does it do? It starts making suggestions, right? It's called autofill. So you start typing a sentence in, and like most of the time, it finishes it before you even get done with it. Like, whoa, how did it know that? Well, it's taking all of the searches out there, and it's ranking them by how popular those searches are. And we can learn a lot about the state of marriages based on Google's most popular searches. Okay, so Google's autocomplete function actually supplies you with suggestions. So if those of you that are really into the details are going to notice that this says Google Canada, okay? I happened to be in Canada when I was putting this together, and what I found pretty interesting is that, do you understand that the people in Canada actually struggle with the same things we do? They're not that much different than we are, okay? I had to go to Canada to figure that out, but really awesome people struggling with the same things that we struggle with. And here's what it did when I started typing stuff in. My husband, first one. Okay? You check it out when you go home today, okay? Like, this is, None of this is made up. This is exactly what popped up on the screen. My husband is annoying. My husband hates me. I'm like, oh my word, what is going on? People are looking for information regarding these types of topics. My husband doesn't love me. My husband is a jerk. Some people are making suggestions to the internet. My husband ignores me. My husband cheated on me. My husband is an alcoholic. Okay, this is what people are looking for information on. Now, the hard thing for me in all of this is that not all of the information, in fact, most of the information you get when you do searches like this is not going to be biblical information. And a lot of people will take what the internet says as almost as good as what the Bible says. So it's dangerous, but it does give us a little picture of the state of what kind of information people are looking for in regards to the state of their marriages. Okay, let's try something else. My marriage is falling apart. My marriage is in trouble. It's over. It's failing. My marriage was a mistake. How can I get my wife to love me again? How can I get my wife in the mood? How can I get my wife to trust me again? Okay, and to not leave you ladies out, how can I get my husband to fall in love with me again? To be more affectionate, to help around the house, to want me, how can I get my husband to be more romantic? How can I get my husband back? Okay, now, this is just one piece of the picture of, I'll just say, the North American marriage. But it's enough to show how many people are looking for help for their marriages and their families. So, I just want to put some handles today on these things, on this thing called our wedding vows and what the meaning behind them are. Okay, so we're just going to break this down. We're just going to talk about it a little bit. And, you can see where you're at in all of this. So the first part of that is for better or for worse. Over the past 22 years, there have been times when I thought or felt as though Jennifer loved and respected me or supported my leadership that I have showered my love on her, right? It's really easy for us to do that when we really feel like we're loved and cared for. It's really easy to reciprocate that. There have also been times when I've not felt the love and respect that I believed I should have had, where I have withheld my expressions of love towards her. And in those cases, my love was nothing more than conditional. Way too many ifs. When I do that, I start to put ifs in those wedding vows, that I'm not loving her unconditionally, I'm loving her conditionally, because I'm withholding, because I don't necessarily like the way that I'm being treated. Yet on that wedding day, I vowed this decided ahead of time love for her. That's what I was saying when I made this statement. I promised that I was going to love her as long as we both shall live, no matter what. And it wasn't just my wife that was listening that day, right? God was listening that day. Our friends were listening that day. And God loves us unconditionally and commands us to do the same. So may we, mirror or reflect the love of God as I love my wife with this decided ahead of time love, not only in the good times, but even in the less than enjoyable seasons. It may mean, guys, loving her unconditionally through difficulty that just comes, I don't know, once a month, once in a while, okay? That's just something that they deal with and how we respond to that. Are you loving her unconditionally? It may mean loving your spouse during seasons of discouragement or depression when they're not even sure they really love you. It may even mean loving them with a Hosea-like love through periods when a spouse may be living in rebellion against you and against God, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer. Okay? Now, based on this vow, for richer, this part of the vow, for richer or for poor, I'm going to ask you, what do you think the number one issue in marriage has to do with? Oh, you guys are so smart. Okay, so that one's easy. What do you think the top three issues in marriage are? The first one, you already said money. What do you think the number two issue in marriage has to deal with? What? Wait a second. Did somebody just say sex in church? People... You're absolutely right. Okay? How about a third? Kids, those little sinners, right? Let's just say that's number four. Oh. In-laws, how dare you? You're correct. Okay? Money, sex, and in-laws. 9 out of 10 arguments in the house have to deal with that of finances. I'm going to take that off the screen because none of the guys are hearing anything I'm saying right now with the word sex on the screen. Okay? 9 out of 10 arguments deal with the issue of finances. And a husband may have a very different idea about finances than his wife. Okay? Many of us can't wait to be tested during this richer period of life, right? God, you know, I'd really be willing to be tested in the richer period of life. I mean, I'm willing, right? I'm willing to take that on if you're willing to, you know, let me have that. And many of us believe that being richer would actually make things better or easier in our marriages. However, riches can bring their own set of issues if not handled very carefully. Ecclesiastes 5:10 says this: whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. And then it says this: this too is meaningless. Okay? Some strong words. I had an individual, a wise individual that we've had opportunity to do life with. He says it like this. He paraphrases that verse as something like this. He always said, Ben, the more money you have, the more bills you will have. And I always thought that was an interesting perspective on money. Okay, riches themselves will test our priorities and our loyalties. Whatever it is that God entrusts to us, we need to remember this decided ahead of time love for our spouses. Our earthly loyalty should be to them, not to our money or to our things. Okay, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health. For those of us who got married at a fairly young age, that part of the vows didn't get a whole lot of thought. Okay, like I got married when I was 23 years old. I wasn't thinking much about this sickness and health thing because, you know, at 23, you're pretty much indestructible. Didn't really give much thought to that. Will the spouse who participated in many of the extracurricular activities with us, like running or hiking or biking or golfing or whatever that is, or who enjoyed passionate physical intimacy with us in our youth, find us just as loving when she needs her walker to get around or when he struggles through the fog of Alzheimer's to show the simplest of affections? I'm watching this right now in the context of my own family. I'm watching my dad with his diagnosis of Alzheimer's. And I don't like watching my dad. I don't like what's happened to him. But what I'm also watching is I'm watching my mom. And I'm watching her continue to love on my dad. Because this is where this comes into play, in sickness and in health. This decided ahead of time love for my dad that my mom made on her wedding day that said, I'm gonna love you no matter what, in sickness and in health. Doesn't matter. Doesn't mean it's gonna be easy, but it doesn't matter. And if we're true to the vow that we've made and committed to what the word says, then we're gonna love them through any debilitating illness or the onset of old age. I wanna share a story with you this morning of some friends of ours who early on in our marriage, we got to do small group with them, and so we did a lot of life. This is Gordon and Laura, so I want to introduce you to Gordon and Laura. And they had something happen in their lives that would be considered very difficult, and I just want to share with you a little bit of their story this morning as we think about this part of our vow that says in sickness and in health. Okay, so this couple is my age. So Gordon is he's a creative guy. He owns part of a business that they do creative things. They help companies, manufacturing companies. I keep tripping on this cord. Hold on one second. There. He helps manufacturing companies design and build things that they can't figure out how to design and build. That's what his organization does. They come to him and say, we got this idea. We don't know how to pull it off. Can you help us? So he's a real creative guy. This is his writing. Boy meets girl, they fall in love. Boy and girl meet Jesus. Funny thing, they were not even looking for him, but him was looking for them. Boy and girl become one. August 8, 1998, in their garden, full moon, clear sky, best friends on the beach till sunrise. Honeymoon in Europe for 2 weeks. Laura's French lessons pay off big time. walk on the beach together late summer 1998, agree to try to have kids. Lord bless this boy and girl with two gorgeous daughters. But then, girl gets sick. Their world shattered. Massive surgeries, double dose chemo, horrible winter. Girl gets well, stays well for 5 years. Girl cured. Boy and girl design and build their dream house together in 2008. Girl gets sick again in summer 2009. Worse in summer 2010. Much worse in September 2010. You are here. We are all here in this moment. The bravest person I know. Sorry it's been so long since the last update, but during that time, many of you have actually walked through our front door to say hi to Laura. Family, extended family, and friends, it's simply been an amazing process. In some ways, it's reminded me of our adult baptism. Laura and I were baptized about a decade ago, a public profession of our faith, an outward expression of an inward change. This past week has been a public expression of love, pure and simple. Quite beautiful. As I mentioned to a good friend today, life's pretty astonishing when your head and heart are truly engaged. About Laura, many have just plain seen a lot in the last few days. It would take many hours to convey all the amazing things we've seen together. In summary, my girl looks better with each passing day since returning home from the hospital. She sleeps nearly all day and night, but she looks and sounds dramatically better than she did in the hospital. She smiles, laughs, is peaceful, has mostly good dreams. There have also been many tears shed as she has begun to understand and perhaps accept her fate. This is very tough stuff. But there was a subtle shift tonight as I awoke an hour ago to her coughing and sobbing. We had a brief discussion once she calmed down. The discussion was about what next. She has so little energy that she wants to save it all for the kids. She asked for me to help her sleep all day without interruption so that she can be able to spend time with the kids and I in the evening. I told her we would make it so. Please hear this loud and clear. She loves all of you dearly, but she's forced to make a choice right now. She cannot do both friends and family. She truly wishes she could, but after today, it's clear she can't. She had absolutely zero energy for the kids and even skipped dinner out of pure exhaustion today. That's very sad. Several of you were lined up for future visits. I'm sorry, but we need to retune around Laura's expressed priorities. Some things have not changed, though. She still has fight in her. I think she would step back into the chemo ring if it were an option. She inquires about it. She's such a warrior. 8 years into it, and she's on her hands and knees, soaked brow, panting, looking for her shield and sword, ready to stand up and fight again. I once said she's the bravest girl I ever met. I would like to revise that. Aside from one man who willingly allowed himself to be mocked, tortured, and murdered on a tree for you and me, Laura's the bravest person I know. On a deeply personal note, I have something else to share. I'm not sure where this phrase came from, but it pops into my head at random times throughout the days. When I'm driving my car, walking through a grocery store, staring at a tree, it's simple, humble, and powerful. It drops me every time it swoops out of a cloud and sinks its talons into my heart. We had a life. I can't even type it without losing it. It's frankly embarrassing to put this out there. Trust me, no grown man wants to publicly say stuff like this. But I feel compelled to do so, and I do so for a purpose, because I don't want any of wisdom's birth pains to be wasted on just me. I tell you this because I care about you, and I've been prompted to remind you that you too have a life, just one to be exact. You and your spouse, you and your sons and daughters, you and your parents, your brothers and sisters, your friends, your heavenly Father, his Son. Don't wait until that life is almost gone to appreciate how intrinsically woven into your life that other person truly is. God invented marriage. He said the man and woman are no longer separate. They are one. That is precisely why this is so painful. We are one, and we're being separated. And we had a life. I may not see Laura again for 40 years. The kids, maybe 70. That's a long time to wait. You have a life right now. I hope you're making the most of it. Incredible that in the middle of a very difficult situation, he's sending stuff out like this to help encourage them around them. God is in the house. Thanks to the ladies who quietly sat with Laura during the day while she slept, this allowed Lucy and I, somebody who came to help take care of the house, to take care of other things in our home today. After homework was done, Laura came downstairs, ate dinner with us, and rented a movie on Apple TV. We watched a G-rated fairy movie. It was so cute. I felt like our kids were five again. We all really enjoyed the moment. After it was over, I walked Laura back up to our bedroom where we sat talking, holding hands, looking into one another's eyes for an hour. In that hour, we shared many fears and tears. We also found strength and peace. It was very clear that God was in the room with us. We felt protected. Our connection was so strong. I have waited hopefully for this moment for a long time. I'm so glad it came for both of us. Later, while putting her to bed, Claire asked me if tonight was a miracle. Claire is one of their daughters. I said, I don't know, but it sure was special. Then she reminded me that every day together as a family is a miracle. I thanked her for reminding me of that. I explained that adults forget stuff too quickly and asked her to help me remember that. Claire, the other daughter, also shared a dream from last night. I guess that's the same daughter. Claire also shared a dream from last night. Our family laughing and having fun together in a brilliant white room. Then a knock at the door. Someone dressed in white had come for Mom. Her word picture was not scary. It sounded serene. I'm glad none of my girls are being haunted by bad dreams. This, too, is no small blessing. Lastly, both kids anxiously ask if we could do this again tomorrow night. That question was the sweetest music to my ears I've heard in a long time. I'm so looking forward to tomorrow night with my girls. Friends, Laura has run a magnificent race for 8+ years. No one could suggest she ever gave less than 100%. Many people have stood along the winding course to cheer and encourage her up steep hills and through the heat of noon. It's been a grueling race, long and fast-paced, and she's been a remarkably strong young woman. But the miles have taken their toll, and she now sees the checkered flag. It's not far off. She's ready for the finish line. She's weary. She longs to cross it, to sit and enjoy a cool drink of water. She so deserves this. We, however, are not ready for this race to end. I am not ready for this boy meets girl story to end. My daughters are not ready. You're not ready. We who have not worn her tattered shoes do not want this race to end. We desire to keep cheering her along the course, encouraging her onward, further. We shout, fight. But I learned something this morning. I saw her sitting, drinking her cool water, looking up at me with calm satisfaction in her eyes. Her expression said it all. I'm done. I gave 100%. I'm satisfied with my performance, and the race is over. That was not the face of a quitter. Far from it. It was the confident face of a champion who ran with such heart. I'm so proud of Laura. We all are. As I looked up from my pillow this morning and stared at a distant cloud, it became very clear to me that while Laura's body suffers to function for another hour, day, or week, her spirit is already communing with her Heavenly Father. She is remarkably peaceful and calm about it all. July 27, 1:05 a.m. I had my hand on Laura's arm for 2 hours prior to her passing. I really didn't sleep from 11 to 1 because her breathing was so quick and labored. I was on my knees at her bedside, slowly injecting medicine into her mouth to calm her rapid breathing. I was unable to wake her to take the medicine. One of her eyes was half open but completely unresponsive. After the last drop was delivered, I looked at her closely with the LED candles we use as portable nightlights. They produced a soft, pale glow. Something inspired me to talk to her more. I was unable to awaken her 2 minutes earlier, but I felt compelled to talk to her. I told her what a great wife she was, that she was a warrior, that I loved her deeply, and she did not need to fight anymore. At that very moment, she opened her eyes, looked up at me, and took her last breath. It was shockingly quick, remarkably peaceful, and no coincidence. Aaron was sleeping next to her when it happened. Claire on the floor in a sleeping bag. Both wanted to be with Mama tonight. I placed a half dozen LED candles under the blankets, which surrounded her with a soft glow, woke the girls and took them out onto the balcony to see the amazing night stars. One of those rare nights with no haze whatsoever. There we stood, looking up at the sky. I pointed to the stars, to the Milky Way, and said, "Your mom's up there too." They looked back at the bed and then realized Mom had passed. The room was silent. The oxygen generator was turned off. It slowly sunk in. They wept for a long time. We wept together later with Laura's mom and four friends. Then I opened gifts Laura had arranged with the help of her friends to give the girls. Claire received a soft stuffed lamb, Aaron a white tiger cub. Each had an electronic greeting from their mom made a few days ago when she was able to talk. She said hi with their name, I love you, good night from mama to each girl. They were shocked and pleased to hear her voice again. They're sleeping with their lamb and the lion now. Tonight was filled with shock and sadness, but also memorable beauty. None of us will forget July 27, or Laura's legacy of love. She was a very special woman. She was already missed. Good night. A decided, ahead-of-time love will see us through all the seasons of marriage, in sickness and in health. And then it goes on to say this, to love and to cherish till death do us part. Christ loves us with an unconditional love. There are no ifs, folks. Hebrews 13:5 says, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. Here's a question that I have for you today. Can your spouse live with a similar assurance that you have decided and promised to love them no matter what? To love and to cherish till death do you part. Several years ago, Jennifer heard me make that vow. I promised to love her with a predetermined love until the Lord calls one or both of us home. And if you were here Thursday night, you heard that it's not always been perfect, right? We've had our ups and our downs. Most of our downs are the result of me. Most of our ups are the result of my wife. But there are no ifs. Several years ago, Jennifer came home with a wooden sign that hangs in our bedroom. And then a couple years later, we each had a ring made and had it engraved on the outside of the ring. But this is what it says. It says, forever, for always, and no matter what. Just a simple reiteration of the vows that we made on our wedding day. So here's what I want us to do, okay? Two things. One we're going to do here. One you're going to do when you go home at some point over the course of the next week. So the first thing is this. Surprise your spouse this week by arranging a time for the two of you to sit on the couch looking at your wedding album together. When's the last time you did that? Just even putting this together this week. I'm sort of excited to go home and pull out our wedding album and sit on the couch and look at that, because we've not done that for a really long time. And here's how I want us to finish today. Okay, we'll play a little music in the background. I want you to just take, if you're here with your spouse, I want you to take a few minutes. If you're not here with your spouse, you can take a minute to pray and just commit to this as best you can, okay? But to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish till death do us part.